when you think of wisdom, Dion just made a reference to it, going back again to chapter 1, verses 1 to 7, you will discover that wisdom is who you know, more so than what you know. So wisdom is, and you remember I said to you that wisdom is personified. So it's like wisdom is a person. So that means that it doesn't necessarily rely upon what you know, but who you know. You know, in most of life, that's how life works. You really get places because of who you know, not always because of what you know. You can know a lot, but if you don't know the right people, you get nowhere. I mean, let's be honest. And so it's true in life when it comes to decisions. It's who you know. And if you know the Lord, and that's the difference between the unsaved person and the saved person. The unsaved person's got a glimmering of wisdom, but they don't always see it through to its eternal consequences. And of course, if you don't have an eternal perspective on your decision making, if you don't make the right eternal decisions, then you're very unwise. You land up to be foolish anyhow in the long run. Now, what I pointed you back to wisdom and creation. And one of the things that you need to think about, and I need to think about, is this. Is where do we actually see wisdom beginning as far as mankind is concerned? And I want to suggest to you this morning that, or it's almost afternoon, that in order to understand wisdom in that context, we need to look at Adam. Because you see, Adam was a unique creature in that sense, in that he was like us, created by God. He was placed in the Garden of Eden, but more importantly, the Bible describes Adam and Eve as having been created in the image and in the likeness of God. And one of the things that Adam was called upon to do was to name all the creatures. I don't know whether you've ever thought about this, but in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 19, it says, "Now the Lord God had formed out of the ground all the beasts of the field and all the birds of the air. He brought them to the man to see what he would name them. And whatever the man called each living creature, that was its name. So the man gave names to all the livestock, the birds of the air, and all the beasts of the field." Now, it's interesting that God didn't name the creatures. Adam did. And that tells me that God calls upon us to use our intellect, and that he's created us rational human beings who are to exercise the use of our minds, and we are to exercise wisdom. I've forgotten who it was. What is his name? Okay, it'll come to me. It shows you on my memory. Do you know, of course, why Adam called elephants elephants? Because they look like elephants. You see, that's a simple answer, isn't it? And you ask yourself that question. I'm just looking for something here that I've just mislaid for a minute. If I can just, it's actually important for me to get you to read this because it is, I've got so many, okay, I'll come back to it now. But the point that I'm making is that, you know, that wisdom has got to do with the whole of God's creation. It's got to do with the whole of God's creation. It includes the naming of the animals. But the one thing, what was the one thing that God told Adam he couldn't do? Eat what fruit? The forbidden fruit. And what is it described as in the book of Genesis? It's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So, what that is saying to us is this. It wasn't up to Adam to decide what was good and evil. Only God can decide what is good, and only God can decide what is evil. The minute man takes that knowledge to himself, he becomes the deciding factor about what is good and evil. And that is what has happened to the human race. And that is why we are in the state that we are in today, is because no longer do we look to God for what is good and evil. We decide ourselves what is good and evil. So, we are now living in a world where, in actual fact, man has chosen to call that which is evil good. And what is good, he calls evil. He's turned the whole thing around. And he has become foolish, says the book of Romans. He has become foolish. So now man can't make any more good decisions because he has lost his desire to obey God, which is the fear of the Lord. Can you see that? So you may ask yourself the question, and this is trying to answer this particular question, is why do we need wisdom? Why is wisdom so important in the Bible? Let's look at chapter 1, and I need you to go back to that again, and I want you to listen to it. It says this, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Now that is a heading for the whole book of Proverbs. That doesn't mean that Solomon wrote every proverb. It means that Solomon was the collector of proverbs, and he also wrote proverbs. But he could be either. Because in the book of Proverbs, if you go back, for instance, go further down into chapter 22, go to chapter 22, you will see it refers in chapter 22, not chapter 22, yes, actually it's chapter, where am I? You'll see the headings there. It says, yes, chapter 22, verse 17, it attributes that to the sayings of the wise. We're not told who they are. If you keep going over the page, you will discover that you get another heading in chapter 24 saying further sayings of the wise. And chapter 25 says the Proverbs of Solomon. So now we're back to Proverbs of Solomon. And then if you go further on, you will in chapter 30, you've got the sayings of that funny man with a funny name. And then you've got a similar funny name in chapter 31. And then you've got a sort of an epilogue. The wife of noble character. The point I'm making is that even within the book of Proverbs, there are other proverbs attributed to other authors, but they all Solomon was regarded as the great wise man, the sage in Israel. So when they collected the book of Proverbs, and we don't quite know how it all came together, it would have been a collection of collections. Does that make sense? Okay, but listen to what it goes on to say. For attaining wisdom, because this is wisdom for Israel. Okay, this is Israel's wisdom. This is not for the Egyptians. By the way, the Egyptians had their own wise, they had their own wisdom. The Assyrians had their wisdom. The Persians had their wisdom. Today, of course, we talk about Chinese proverbs. You know, reminding us that wisdom lies outside of the ambit of the Christian church. But it lacks its eternal perspective because the Lord, the fear of the Lord is not at the center of it. If the fear of the Lord is not the beginning of wisdom, then it's very foolish. Because it ends up in hell, to put it bluntly. That's where it heads. So although you make all these other decisions, the big eternal decision is the wrong one. Now notice there in chapter 1 verse 2, for attaining wisdom and discipline. Now look at the words. The Proverbs are therefore attaining wisdom and discipline for understanding words of insight. So we need discipline, we need insight for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair. Okay? Now, when you look at those words, you ask yourself the question, do you need any of those things? Do you need discipline? Do you need understanding? Do you need insight? Do you want to live a prudent life? Do you want to do what is right and just and fair? Well, of course you do. And the reason why is because the fear of the Lord is at the center of your life. But you also know that you're a sinner and you can't trust yourself. And I can't trust myself. I can't trust myself to make my own decisions. I've got to rely on the fear of the Lord. I've got to rely on the Lord to guide me. And so I am very hesitant with my decisions because I know that my natural tendency is to be undisciplined. It's to be unwise. It's to lack insight. And it is not to be fair. It is not to be right. And it's not to be just. That's the inclination of my heart. And we fool ourselves if we think we're good people, because we're not. I hope we all know that. And it is only by God's grace. And so wisdom comes as a gift from God to guide us. Now, who does it guide? Look at verse 4. For giving prudence to who? The? Now, who are the simple? If I said to you, don't be so simple. Don't tell my mother I said this. My mother used to say that to me. But that was an old, because she's an old, she's an 85-year-old woman. But she used the word in a different way. Okay? But when we think of the word simple, we have a simpleton in mind. Don't be so stupid. You see? Now, my mother wasn't actually saying to me, don't be so stupid. You see, it's more the saying of the word than the word itself. But in the Bible, when the Bible uses the word simple, it doesn't mean it in a derogatory sense. It refers to a person who lacks experience. The simple person. Shame. It's almost like the innocent person. They don't know their left hand from their right hand. Okay? Now, I don't know about you, but in that sense, I kind of feel the Bible's description of me would be very apt if it addressed me as simple. Because I sometimes don't know my left hand from my right hand. You see? And I need wisdom. So I say to myself, thank you, Lord, for putting the word simple there, because that's me. Look at the next word. And discretion to the young. Can you see now how it's linked to the young? The word simple there is not a derogatory term. It's not a reference to intellect. In actual fact, the word simple there is more a moral, ethical word, referring to a person's inability to make these, they're confronted with these huge temptations. Okay? And the young here, again, knowledge and discretion to the young. It's the unschooled. So when the Bible uses the word young here, it's referring to those who are unschooled. We have to be taught. And you know, this is something we need to understand about even our children and about ourselves. Sometimes we've got to learn wisdom. And then notice thirdly, which is interesting, who else will the book of Proverbs help? In verse 5. Let the wise listen and what? Add to their learning. And let the discerning get guidance. Oh, that's interesting. Does it mean that the wise can actually learn something more? Well, yes. Does it mean that the discerning can actually get guidance? Well, of course, yes. You see? And then I want you to notice, how does he describe the Proverbs? For understanding Proverbs and what? Parables. So he calls the Proverbs parables. What are parables? Parables, do any of you do cryptic puzzles? Cryptic puzzles. I love cryptic puzzles. I try and get into the mind of the guy or the woman who's drawn, because I need to know what they've got in mind. Because once you get that, then you get all their puzzles. Okay, because you get onto them. And that's wisdom, you see. You see, it is. What it's doing is you're actually learning how that person's thinking. So you know when they refer to this that they're talking about, ha-ha. Because you bought the paper or the magazine the following week and you saw the answer. And you said, I've got you. The next time I see that come up, I know how you think. And then they can change the author. And you've got to start the whole process over again. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, parables are cryptic. And what does that mean? It means that the truth is not there on the surface. The truth lies beneath the surface. Now, what you need to understand about proverbs is they're like parables. The truth doesn't lie at the surface. Don't be too taken aback by or awed by the beauty of a proverb. Because proverbs are usually presented in poetical form. So they always sound so nice. And they sound appealing. But don't be fooled by that, because the truth of the parable, the proverb, does not lie in that area. It lies beneath the surface. You've got to read it. And when you get beneath the surface, it will guide you. And I'm going to show you some of them just now. So, and what else? And the sayings and riddles of the wise. You see? So parables, sometimes what the book of Proverbs will do is they get you scratching your head and saying, what is this actually saying? And what it needs you to do is that parables need to, sorry, I keep calling them parables now. Proverbs must be understood properly, or else you're going to apply them incorrectly. Now I'm going to really confuse you. You actually need wisdom to use proverbs. Because one proverb in that situation may not be the same proverb in another situation, but the situations may be identical. Okay, let me ask you this, and I'm going to show you one in the book of Proverbs. If I said this to you, he who hesitates is lost. What does that mean? It's not in the book of Proverbs, it's a Chinese or one of these proverbs. He who hesitates is lost. Okay? So if you're gonna give a person advice and they've got to make a decision, you say to them, look, if you hesitate, you're lost. If you don't act now, you're going to lose out. Now, let me put this one to you. What does this mean? Look before you leap. Look before you leap. Make sure before you make this decision that you know exactly everything about it and how far down this cliff is, and is there water down at the bottom there, or are there just sharp rocks that are going to put. Look before you leap. Now, you may be counseling somebody, and on one occasion, you will have to say to him, he who hesitates is lost. And you may be counseling that same person, making another decision, and you may say to him, you know, you must look before you leap. Now, you need to know the wisdom when to apply which one. Because they are both true. But they are opposites. But they're both proverbs. So when I read the book of Proverbs, I mustn't say every time I read this, in every situation, this is always true. Because it's not. Proverbs are not promises. Proverbs are not laws that work every time. Promises need you to understand when they are needed. They need you. Okay, turn with me quickly to Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 4. Would somebody read it out for me? Who's going to read it? Proverbs 26, verse 4. Okay, there it is. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him yourself. What does that proverb mean? Anybody want to answer? What is it doing? If you're in a context where there's a fool speaking, please don't use me as an example. And the fool is speaking, okay? Proverbs 26 verse 4 says, do not answer a fool according to, or you will look like him. You know, sometimes you're in company and somebody's talking and you know that they're completely wrong. They're completely wrong in what they're saying. If you start arguing with them, you will look as foolish as them before the day is through. Have you actually, so somebody said earlier on, you know, it's good to know when to keep your mouth shut. It's, you know, there's a time to speak and there's a time to shut up. It's good to know which one you've got to do at which time. Now, what does Proverbs chapter 26 verse 5 say? The very next proverb. The one contradicts the other. It says, answer a fool according to his folly or he will be wise in his own eyes. What is that saying? Anybody want to answer? Going to think he's great. Excluding me, eh? I'm not included. So, now the thing is this. When do I apply which one? You see, you've got to know the person. You've got to read the situation. So sometimes a person makes a real huge mistake. They say the wrong thing. The worst thing you can do is to correct them. Well, I think even then you need wisdom, because you've got to decide how badly it's going to affect. You know, let me give you an example. I mean, this is not a good example, but it's a kind of an example. I had a very good friend of mine who was actually my rector's warden for years at Tekai, and he got up to read the Bible one night, and he was excellent when he read and prayed. He was outstanding, and he would rarely ever make a mistake. You know, I mean, it was always spot on. I'll never forget, he was reading from Acts chapter 17, and it was where Paul was waiting for Timothy to join him, and it says in the verse that Paul looked around and he saw that the city was full of idols. My friend, when he read the passage, he actually got it confused, and he said the city was full of idiots. And I could understand how he sort of got the thing. And there was people looked around and nobody laughed or anything, and he went on and he read. And now, you know, the thing I could have done, and I mean, I don't consider him a fool, but the thing I could have done was I could have immediately got up after the service or during my sermon and drawn attention to the fact that he had made a mistake in his reading and sort of maybe embarrassed him slightly or whatever. Or I could even have gone to him, which I never did. I didn't think I correct him at all. And so we used to meet on a regular basis for prayer, and we were actually meeting that Wednesday. And he came to me, he said, Desmond, he said, I read on Sunday night, and my wife tells me that I said this. I said, yeah. So he said, why didn't you tell me? I said, well, I didn't think it was important. So I said, apart from the fact that you were right, I said, they're idiots. If they're worshipping idols, they're idiots. So, now that's not a good example, because in this context, this friend of mine is a godly Christian man. But you know, there's a time to correct people, and there's a time not to correct them. And even that wrong reading may have affected other people. But it didn't actually make a big difference to the sermon, or whether they were going to go off the rails or anything. What I'm saying is, it requires wisdom. And what I want you to see is that you've got to know when a particular proverb applies, so that wisdom is context driven. Do you know there's a time to be angry? You know, if you're a principal or you're something, there's a time to be angry with a student, but there's a time to hold your anger back. And it's good to know the difference. And because anger that is exerted, which is hopefully righteous anger for a good reason, will produce good fruit, if exercised at the right time and in the wrong right context. If it's not in the wrong way, in the wrong context, it actually wreaks havoc. It creates chaos around the place. You see? So that what you need to understand is that Proverbs are very much driven by the moment. Applying it at the right time to the right people, to the right context. So you've constantly got to be thinking. You've got to be observing. You've got to be looking. And that is why it requires understanding. It requires discretion. It requires insight. It requires prudence. It requires discipline. It requires a sense of justice and of fairness. And sometimes we say the right thing at the wrong time. We say the right thing at the wrong time. And we fall into that trap. And so we need to really be guarded in the way that we use wisdom, because it is very context driven. Now I quickly want you to turn to chapter 9. Was somebody going to read chapter 9 for us? Okay. Do you want to read it from where you are? Because you can just, if that's okay. Okay.
She has hewn out the pillar. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has overset her table. She has set out her range, and she calls from the highest point to meet the feet. Let all who are simple come and hear, she says to those who lack judgment. Come, eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways, and you will live. Walk in the way of understanding. Whoever corrects the mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker, or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Instruct the wise man, and he will be wise as souls. Teach a righteous man, and he will add to his learning. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For through me your days will be many, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer. The woman's body is loud. She is under the vision without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house and is seated at the highest point of the city, calling to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Then all who are humble come in here to speak to those who have judgment. Silence also is sweet. Simple things in secret are delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there.
Thank you. Now, what you have here in I'm just getting my notes in order here. Do you remember that I said to you that in the book of Proverbs, if you look at the structure, now we're going to just very briefly, we've only got a few minutes, the structure of the book of Proverbs is broken up into two big sections, or one bigger than the other. The first is chapters 1 to 9. And chapters 1 to 9 is in the form of a discourse between a father and his son. So if you go back to chapter 1, verse 8, just go back to chapter 1, verse 8. And I'm just going to read some of it because it's the best way to actually pick up what I'm saying. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head, and a chain to adorn your neck. Now, all through this book, all through these first chapters, that is the picture. You've got a father sitting down with his son, talking to him about life, which fathers should do, which is why the Bible says that we should, when we sit with our children in the home or outside or while we're walking, we should talk to them about the Word of God. And this is the picture that you have here. Okay? From chapter 10 to the end, what you've got is a collection of individual proverbs. So it's structured differently. I'm hoping we're going to do some just now, but tomorrow morning I'm going to be preaching on those proverbs. I'm only taking one topic, and I'll preach on that section. But this morning I thought we could quickly look at these first 9 chapters. And the reason why I got us to read chapter 9 is because it's the climax of these chapters, and it presents you with these two women building their houses. Okay? Do you notice in chapter 9 verse 1, it says wisdom has built her house. Okay? So she builds a house, and she is unit out of 7 pillars. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. And she also sets her table. She has sent out her maids, and she calls from the highest point of the city. So you get this picture that this woman has set herself up. Who is she? She is called Wisdom. But you notice that there in verse 13, we are introduced to another woman, the woman Folly. She is loud. She is undisciplined. Without knowledge, she sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of the grave. The meal that she offers is a stolen meal. It's a different meal to the one that wisdom offers. Wisdom prepares her meal. She uses, she prepares her meat and she mixes her wine. She's careful. She's conscientious in what she does. Okay? And she sends out her mage and she calls from the highest point in the city. You notice what she does is she actually goes out into the city. Whereas woman folly, she sits at the door of her house. She sits at the door of her house. Now, obviously what you've got here, and forgive me for bringing this into the illustration, but I'm not saying forgive me, but because it's scriptural, but you really actually get the picture of a prostitute. And I'm told, I've not seen this myself, if you go overseas in some places, you actually see literally what you've got described here in the main streets and in places where this is the enticement. And you can imagine a young boy or a young man coming into his adulthood, walking around these streets. And these women are very visible because they build their houses, both of them, on the highest point. Okay? But notice that woman folly is very loud. It's not that wisdom, madam or dame wisdom, doesn't want to be heard. But she sends, and in actual fact I could change the word there to evangelists. She evangelizes. She sends out the good news. And she says, let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Come eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of understanding. Wherever, and then there's this little bit here about correcting, okay? And then she says in verse 11 of herself, for through me your days will be many and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer. So, Lady Wisdom, she really wants to invite people in. And if you go back, to chapter, I just need to get this, okay, I've actually marked it here and I need to find it. Okay, can somebody just go back into chapter 7 or 8, and there's a description. Now, before I go to that, I might have written it down here myself, more than likely have. You know, this is the problem with she sits in the door. Okay, here we go. If you look at, actually you've got to go back to chapter 1. Go back to chapter 1 and verse 20. Notice what she does. Here, wisdom calls aloud in the street. She raises her voice in the public squares. This is Lady Wisdom. Now, we're going back, we're reading back into the story that the climax was this house that they each building. Now, we're looking at these women being described earlier on. Wisdom calls aloud in the street. She raises her voice in the public squares. Notice that she's very visible in the sense that she goes to the main places. She's not deceitful. Okay, she's not trying to entice. She doesn't go into the dark corners. She goes out into the public place. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. In the gateways of the city, she makes her speech. How long will you simple ones, etc. And she speaks about all that she has to offer. But notice the warning that she issues in verse 24. She says, but since you rejected me when I called, and no one gave heed when I stretched out my hand, since you have ignored all my advice and would not accept my rebuke, I will in turn laugh at your disaster. I will mock when calamity overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you. Now, it's actually, You mustn't forget that this is a Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is trying to teach truth in a gripping way. And what he's saying here, or what she is saying, is this, is that if you reject me, I will laugh at you. I will laugh at you. And when will I laugh at you? I will laugh at you when calamity comes upon you, when disaster comes upon you, when distress comes upon you. Now, if you think of those words, how many people haven't landed themselves in terrible calamity, terrible distress, terrible disaster because of their decisions? And in a sense, at that moment in time, wisdom laughs at them. It's a mocking laugh. It's not a pleasant. But that's the way that the Father's teaching the Son and saying to him, this is what's going to happen. You see? And then go across to chapter 2, verse 10. This is the benefit. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men, from men whose words are perverse, who leave the straight paths. You see, there's that word paths again. To walk in the dark ways, who delight in doing wrong and rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked. Now, do you notice that what she is saying is this: these are all the good things I can bring to you. These are the good things that I can bring to you. And if you've got wisdom, if you have got wisdom, wisdom will reward you. Okay? Something happening behind me here? No. Wisdom will reward you. And so that all through this section, where you get to this climax of this woman building this house, he is saying to your son, if you make your way to her house, the meal she serves you and the food she gives you will bring health to you. You see? Now, this is where it gets, a little bit humorous, maybe for some women here today, maybe for some men. What he has in mind is the woman she's going to marry. You see, if she chooses the right woman, but he's using it in a metaphorical, a double sense. She will, if he's wise, he will choose the right woman. If she is wise, it applies for the woman as well. She will choose the right man. And the food that they eat. And that is why the book of Proverbs says, rejoice with the wife of your youth. You see, and if you eat from her, don't go and draw water from somebody else's well. That's the picture that is used. Because that water will be bitter. That water will be bitter. You see, but it also says this, don't let everybody come and drink your water. Because then your water is contaminated. Keep it pure. Keep it for the one. Get onto the right path. Choose the right woman. Choose the right man. Make the right decisions. And when you do that, you will be rewarded. Seek for Lady Wisdom. It's her house. It's her voice. It's everything she's saying that you must listen out carefully for. But you know, there's a terrible warning about woman folly and what she brings. And I want you to turn with me to chapter 5. My son, have you got it? Chapter 5, verse 1. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen well to my words of insight, that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. For the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths are crooked, but she knows it not. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I am saying. Keep to the path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your best strength to others and your years come to one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth, and your toil enrich another man's house. At the end of your life, you will groan, when your flesh and body are spent, you will say, how I hated discipline, and how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or listen to my instructors. I've come to the brink of utter ruin in the midst of the whole assembly. What a tragic life. Why? Why is it so tragic? It's tragic because, look at what it says in the next verse. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. He was drinking water from somewhere else. And you can understand the empty, what that means. Okay? But then he goes on and he says in chapter 6, is that, actually, I must go further than chapter 6. I must go to, no, it's chapter 6, verse 20. Can I read this to you as well? My son, keep your father's commands and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Bind them upon your heart forever. Fasten them around your neck. When you walk, they will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. When you awake, they will speak to you. For these commands are a lamp. This teaching is a light. And the corrections of discipline are the way to life. Keeping you from the immoral woman, from the smooth tongue of the wayward wife. Do not lust in your heart after her beauty, or let her captivate you with her eyes. For the prostitute reduces you to a loaf of bread, and the adulteress preys upon your very life. Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? So is he who sleeps with another man's wife. No one who touches her will go unpunished. I don't know when last you've had a braai and you've used briquettes and they are white hot, red hot. Would you sit there with a spade and scoop them out and put them on your lap? Of course you wouldn't. Why? Because it is foolish. The writer to the proverb says, you are doing the same thing when you commit adultery. Now, he uses this picture because it's very graphic. And it makes the point. But what you need to understand is that it applies to many other areas of life where you need wisdom. And so what he is doing at this point is he is sitting down with his son. And he's warning him. Can you, if you read these 9 chapters, I want you to read them before tomorrow. Won't take you long. You will pick up how the father, he admonishes his son. He says, don't do this. This is dangerous. Do this. Don't follow this, because this is what they're trying to do to you. He warns them all the time. And then he ends with this picture, this graphic picture of these houses being built. And it's sort of just left there. It's just left hanging there. It doesn't say anything. But basically, and maybe to close this section off, you know, we all face choices in life. We all have to make a choice. We will all decide what we're going to do. And that's what the book of Proverbs says, make the right choice. Now, I don't know if you've got any questions, because there's one other small exercise, although we've only got 5 minutes to go. Please forgive me, I've jumped around because I wanted to try and cover as much as possible to give you enough to work on. Have you been with me? Okay. Okay, well, we can have some. I wanted to go through some of the verses in the next section and show you some things along the way that I think will be of help. So maybe I'll leave this and follow Dion's suggestion, and perhaps just ask you if you've got any questions. You want to make any comments? Or any questions that you might have about what I've said so far? Do you know something? I don't think I'll remember what I've said, because I've... Well, that's quite right. It's, you know, the Bible speaks a lot about foolishness and wisdom. And so that the Bible also says the fool has said in his heart there is no God. You see, the fool has said in his heart there is no God. And in Romans it speaks about the fact that we worship the creature rather than the creator, and in doing so we have become fools. You see, the one thing you can write across the whole world is the word fool. And you could write that across our lives before we came to know Christ. By the way, that's a key point which I've just remembered now. I showed you. You see, this is why you've got to remember all these things. Wisdom looks back to creation. But it looks forward to Christ. It looks forward to Christ. I want you to turn to the book of Colossians. Colossians chapter 2. And I'll end with this. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 2. My purpose is that they may be encouraged in heart and united in love, so that they may have the full riches of complete understanding. You see that? What has God? Colossians chapter 2 verse 2. He says, my purpose is that they may be encouraged in heart and united in love, so that they may have the full riches of complete understanding, in order that they may know the mystery of Christ, of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden what? All the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. You see, Christ came to live the wise life. Christ was the only truly wise person. And in him, you will find all the treasures of God's wisdom and knowledge. So that for us, the most important thing is for us to know him. And the most tragic thing would be what Paul follows saying in verse 4. He says, I tell you this so that no one may deceive you by fine-sounding arguments. You see, a lot of people today will say, you know, the Christians are so insignificant. What do they know? What do they know? Well, Jesus said about God, about Christians, is they are the light of the world. Do you know the Christian is the only person who has the right answer to the world's problems? Only the Christian. And it's not because of us, it's because of Christ. He is the answer. We are not light in and of ourselves, we are reflected light. We reflect the light of Christ. We're not the sun, we're only the moon. You see? Christ is the sun. Both the S-U-N and the S-O-N. And as we reflect that light, as we are in his light, we reflect it. And so that wisdom comes through. And so, you know, the youngest Christian, the most newborn Christian in the faith, can speak to a non-Christian and give them the best advice that they've ever heard. Because their eyes have been opened spiritually and they've got knowledge and discernment beyond what this world has got to offer, because the world is in darkness. The world is living a life of foolishness, because the world has said there is no God. Whereas the Christian is living in the fear of the Lord, and all the knowledge that they have, all the knowledge that the Christian has is built on the foundation. So that, you know, it's like, do you know those prison, you know, those things we used to have them at school where they would show how the light would reflect a different, would reflect through. You see, the Christian, everything the Christian sees, now let me change the illustration. He sees through glasses. He doesn't see with his natural eye. Every Christian is wearing glasses, and they are called Christ glasses. They are called biblical glasses. It's called revelation. It's God's truth. So when I look at an ant, when I look at, you know, Jenny, we were watching one of the, I love these National Geographic programs on television. Absolutely. I mean, this morning, as we were leaving to come here, there was one on lions and tigers and leopards, how they hunt each other, you know, and you don't mess with a lion. That was the message. I'm fascinated. And you know, Jenny and I watched something the other night. We watched this thing on squid. Did you know that squid eat squid? Okay? They're cannibals. They actually eat their own kind. And they were out, I think they were Australians or New Zealanders. It was very good. They were out at night and they were showing you, they took these squid out and inside there were others, you know, there were these baby squid and that. But it was just fascinating to, and you think to yourself, God created all these things. They're so intricate, so amazing. And you listen to the commentators speaking about it, but they give no credit to God. And Jenny mentioned that. Jenny said, you know, isn't it sad that they can see all of this, but they don't see the Lord in it? And that is so foolish. It is so foolish. So that's what the book of Proverbs is about. And what one really needs to do is to actually, you can do a series. You should get Dion to do a series in the book of Proverbs. I actually tried to, I'm going to order them for you. I wanted to bring Dion two or three commentaries on Proverbs. And believe it or not, the bookshop was out of them because it is a book that Christians haven't studied. But if you were to ask me, what value is there in the book of Proverbs for Christian? I would say this, the book of Proverbs mirrors the new life. It mirrors the Christ-shaped life because it demonstrates how we will behave. So don't think that the book of Proverbs is like an Old Testament book and it's not a Christian book. It's part of Christian revelation. And we must read it as God's word to us today. And when I reflect on it, it will point me to what the Christian life should look like. And so it's a very valuable one. So tomorrow morning we'll be looking at something in that. So thank you very much for being so patient so far.